Hello, homemakers, and welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife, a mom to four grown kids, a granny to two, and I have been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. Whether you are new or a regular listener, I thank you for joining me today for the final episode of season 18. I have a fantastic seasoned homemaker portrait for you today, but before we get to that, I want to share a few things from my own homemaking journey. That means it is time for Allison's Update. This is the part of the podcast where I tell you what's happening in my home and what homemaking resources I am loving lately. This update is brought to you by listeners who support the Art of Home through Buy Me a Coffee. Buy Me a Coffee is a virtual tip jar where you can show your appreciation and support for the show by giving a one-time tip or by becoming a Titus Two Woman supporter and setting up a recurring tip of $5 per month. Titus Two Women supporters receive access to a weekly audio version of Homemaker Happy Mail. Whichever way you choose to give, I am grateful for your support. Last week, I shared about the unfortunate cost of neglecting to care for my vacuum cleaner. And this week, I've still been slowly but surely decluttering spaces and doing some spring cleaning. So I thought I would share some more of my favorite cleaning tools and products that I've been employing lately. Once my trusty vacuum has done its work, my favorite way to wash my tile floors is with a steam mop. I have tried every other kind of mop, and this by far gets my floors the cleanest. It is lightweight, it has a nice long cord, and the mop head is reversible, so you can use both sides of the removable cleaning pad, which, by the way, you can also buy refills. You can buy multiple of those cleaning pads so that you have more than one, because oftentimes if I'm cleaning a large space, I go through more than one pad at a time. The reservoir only takes water, never cleaning solution. But I have found that putting a few drops of lavender oil inside the cleaning pad before I slip it onto the mop head leaves a lovely scent when I am mopping. If I have a very stubborn stain, I might pre-treat it with a bit of cleaning spray, let it sit, and then go over it with the steam mop. The mop I use is a Shark Professional Superheated Pocket Mop, and it runs about $70 US on Amazon. While that is a lot more pricey than your average rag or sponge mop that you'd pick up at the grocery store, it will pay for itself in what you save on cleaners since it only requires water. And yes, it does use electricity, but I find that it cleans really quickly, so I'm not running it for a very long time. I have a walk-in shower, which is fully tiled, and it's lovely for taking a shower, but it is very difficult to keep clean, and it is backbreaking to scrub with a traditional brush. My favorite tool for cleaning the shower saves my back and my knees. It is basically a scrubbing pad on a long telescoping handle. The head can be changed out to a brush and the handle extended to about 3 feet, so I don't have to bend down to clean and it will reach up to the top of the shower walls. This tool also works really well for cleaning a traditional tub shower combo so that you don't have to get on your knees to scrub the inside of the tub nor lean uncomfortably over the tub and reach those back walls. And finally, I caved and I became a Swiffer duster convert. I have tried the reusable microfiber dusting wands, but I found that the Swiffer just works better at capturing dust on all kinds of surfaces. It also has a telescoping handle that extends to about 2.5 feet. I use it to dust everything. I use it to dust electronics, furniture, walls. I especially like it for running over the baseboards before I vacuum. It really keeps the dust under control. The Swiffer branded refills are a bit pricey, but I have found that the Walmart brand works just as well for a fraction of the cost. Well, there you have it. Those are some of my favorite cleaning tools. I will be sure to link everything in the show notes below. Now on to today's episode. I'm chatting with seasoned homemaker Kathy Bauer about her nearly 40 years experience keeping a home. Kathy is full of wisdom and lots of practical ideas. I know you will learn a lot from this episode. She was nominated by her daughter, Laura, who listens to The Art of Home, and I wanted to share what Laura wrote about her mom and why she thought she would make a good candidate for an Art of Home interview. Kathy believes in the traditional art of homemaking, even now that it's just her and her husband at home, both in their 60s. They use cloth napkins and build a fire even on weeknights. She has great knowledge about hospitality and making food for people who are going through tough times, just like her father used to do by bringing soup to the sick at church. She has been baking for family since she was a girl and gives baked Christmas gifts. She is an active grandmother. She still does cannonballs in the pool with them and is always planning fun things for her grandchildren. She bakes homemade birthday cakes for my son, who has a severe nut allergy. She has routines and organizational ideas that would be beneficial for a younger audience that she learned from having three kids at home, including one that had severe ADHD and needed certain systems in place. She is a list maker and very task-oriented. Her list is always on the counter. People used to tease her about being like Martha Stewart because she thinks of everything. She believes in taking care of her husband first, even though she works outside the home. She believes that the Holy Spirit leads us and will often say that God has a plan. She has her own private daily biblical practices, but believes we should show who God is by the way we help those in need. I'm so grateful that Laura nominated her mom for The Art of Home. She really does display all of these qualities, and her story reflects her love of home and homemaking. Thank you so much for trusting me with some of your time and for taking us along with you today as you do your very good work in your home. I will be back at the end of this conversation to share some of my top takeaways and some exciting news about what is coming this year on the Art of Home podcast. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen, I know you will enjoy Kathy's story of home. Welcome to The Art of Home. I'm here with my new friend, Kathy Bauer, and Kathy is a very experienced homemaker, and her daughter nominated her, and based on her nomination, I am really excited to hear her story. I think she's going to have a lot of wisdom and insight to bring to us here today, but before we get into all that good stuff, Kathy, why don't you just say hi to everybody and tell us a little bit about who you are today?
Okay, I'm happy to be here. I am 62 years old. I will be married 40 years in July this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. My husband is retired, and I have three adult children. I have a daughter who is 38 and two sons, 36 and 34. Mm-hmm. I have two grandchildren who are 9 and 8, and they are my daughter's children. I have a job. I work 3 days a week for a local company, and I've been there 13 years, and I love reading and traveling, both just day trips and, you know, overseas. I love puzzles and being with my family.
Awesome. All right. So what do you like to read? Are you a fiction or a nonfiction or both?
Well, both, but mostly fiction. I like historical fiction. My sister-in-law happens to be a wealth of good recommendations.
Very
long books. And I usually listen to those on Audible. And I'm open to, sometimes I do what I call a palate cleanser, which is just a silly book after, you know, The War of 1812 or something.
I love that. I'm going to start using that, a palate cleanser, because sometimes you're like, oh, I'm just reading this fluffy book or something, you know, it's like, oh, This is just some trashy book or something, but I like palate cleanser. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Cause some of those heavier books are, man, you need a palate cleanser. We're in our fourth year, I think, of a online book club with some family and friends. And we are slogging our way through the classics. So it's all about getting through the classics. And I mean, some are awesome and have been so enjoyable, but some of them, man, it is, we are there to build each other up, to keep going, to get through some of these books. Usually when I finish one of those, I'm like, I need a palate cleanser. Yes. I need to not have to think so hard.
Right.
That's great. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning of your story, and why don't you tell us, when did you first become a homemaker, and when you did you bring any skills with you?
Well, I became a homemaker in 1984. I was 22 years old when we got married. That's the first time I was out on my own. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be a wife and mother. in college, you know, when the girls would talk about what careers they wanted and everything, I would say, well, I want to be a wife and mother. And I think some of them secretly wanted to answer that way. But, you know, at that time, early 80s, there was a lot of pressure on women to want careers. And it wasn't really for me. What I brought in, I learned how to bake. My grandma was a good baker, and I really admired that. So I learned, you know, the basics, cookies and things, but also some, you know, cakes, that type of thing. And then I expanded, probably as a preteen, into yeast breads. We happened to have a person that worked in our home once a week as a housekeeper, the house I grew up in, and she was from Germany, and she really helped me understand yeast baking, gave me hints, and so I was a good baker when I came to the marriage. I really didn't know much about cooking.
Okay.
I can remember we had guests very early in our marriage, and the chicken dish was not done, and I was embarrassed, but, you know, I was learning.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So would you say that cooking was your steepest learning curve, or did you have something else? Or, well, how did, yeah. Okay, so first of all, how did you get better at the cooking? And then were there any other steep learning curves, and how did you get better at those?
Well, I think I'm a type of person who's not afraid to try. If you can read, you can cook. I felt that was true. So, and I was raised in a food type of family. My dad did cooking. My mom did cooking. My dad's dad was a chef. And I was willing to try. So, and I asked questions. I can remember as a young housewife calling my grandma and asking how long I had to boil potatoes to make potato salad. I didn't know the basics. And I had a Better Homes and Gardens cookbook that I relied on. So, and I think another big thing is the timing of meals. Having everything done at once, that's not easy.
And I know.
That takes time.
I agree. Yeah. There's two parts. I think there's two parts, like just like you described, to cooking, to learning the skill of cooking as a homemaker. And that is the actual cooking part and the timing part. Mm-hmm. Because, oh gosh, it was years before I mastered the timing part.
It's not easy.
And then you start throwing kids into the mix.
Oh yeah.
You know, because then they're interrupting, and then that throws your timing off completely. So,
right.
Yeah. That's a big learning curve. Okay. Well, let's talk about expectations and challenges. So how well did the day-to-day reality of homemaking match your expectations?
I think that they did. They really did for a couple of years. And I discovered that I enjoyed housekeeping. I enjoyed the mechanical things like fixing things. I enjoyed making a home, like, you know, choosing paint colors, learning to wallpaper, all of that stuff I liked. And I came to really like cooking as a hobby. I really like it. And I would say it met my expectations until my second child was born. And all of a sudden it was like, how am I supposed to do this? I can remember, like, when you bring a baby home, you have to take the child to the doctor, like, the second day or something.
Yeah.
And I can remember thinking, how am I going to get showered and get everybody over there? Like, it's almost like I didn't think it through.
Yeah.
But you know what? I learned.
You made it. You made it.
I made it.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Balancing that second child was a learning curve. And I think the other thing is that I still to this day put a lot of pressure on myself. The people in my family have told me over and over and over. And that's something that I started to try to learn, and I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Okay. I was going to say, what are you putting pressure on yourself about? Just like how things turn out or look, or like how well you're doing your job as a homemaker?
Oh, like if a dinner doesn't turn out, then I don't know. I'm hard on myself that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not Martha Stewart, but I try to be.
I think even Martha makes mistakes sometimes.
I'm sure she does.
And she does have like an entire staff.
Yeah, that helps.
So keep that in mind, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, I know based on what your daughter said about you in the application, the nomination, is that you are very organized. And so I would just love to hear, and I'm sure the listeners would love to hear, some of the practical ways that you managed your household over the years. What did you find that worked well and what didn't work well?
Well, that what she said is very true. I am most comfortable when I'm organized. When I'm disorganized, I am completely out of sorts. Mm-hmm. So I found that the extra work is worth it for my comfort level and the comfort level of my family. I am very structured. I like to have a cleaning day. I always meal planned, so I would do a shopping day. When the kids were in the house, we found as a family it was easier just like to eat at 6 p.m. My husband didn't like the pressure of all of us waiting for him. And if something came up at work and he was late, then he walked in and we were all, you know, hungry. So we made a family agreement, you know, we eat at six. And okay. 95% of the time he was there. But, mm-hmm. you know, and I had a dinner bell. Oh my gosh, my daughter was so embarrassed. We lived in a neighborhood out in the country and there were larger yards. And so I didn't want to be screaming all over. And so I put up a dinner bell and Laura especially would come so fast because she wanted me to stop.
She wanted you to stop ringing that bell.
Yeah. As far as laundry, I really pretty much every day I did a load of light and a load of dark. That for me was just easier to handle. As the kids age, you know, they had piano lessons and confirmation. And so we came up with a family as Wednesday night was the easy night. Like my husband would bring home subs or I would do like a market day meal, which, you know, was just an easy breezy dinner. We kind of found that it was best if my husband did dishes and I supervised what we called study table. When I was in college, I learned that the football players had this thing called study table where they all came together and had to study together. And mm-hmm. I thought, what a great idea. So we'd clear the table and they'd have to sit down and they did their homework until they were a little older and could be trusted to do it, you know, in their rooms.
Yeah.
And that really worked out well.
One of you was supervising the study table?
I was supervising and my husband would do the dishes.
Oh, wow.
And,
great.
Yeah, it was really great. In fact, I never gave up that. I'm not supervising anyone, but he's doing the dishes.
Hey, partnership. Yeah. That works. Right. That's awesome. Okay.
So, Sunday was family day. I know. Now I don't know how I could get away with this now, but in the 80s, that meant no Sunday activities. If they wanted to join something like soccer that took place on Sunday, it was a hard no. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do it. Went to church. We had dinner in the dining room. And a lot of times we'd invite, you know, my parents or Dave's mom. And I would make a, you know, a nicer dinner, a roast or something. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that I grocery shopped once a week. I put all the kids in carts. I would take two carts and kind of go along. And I had this thing where they would ask for food like kids do, you know, can we get that cereal? And then I'd make a thing where I'd go, let's see. And I said, oh, that's not on here. No, but we can put it on the list for next week. And they fell for it. You know, it was really cute. Now I still do the once a week shop. I plan the meals. I write down, for the most part, dinners, but I do some lunches too, because I take lunch to work and then my husband's at home. He needs a lunch. I make my list in the order of the store, which to me makes sense. And this sounds really nerdy, but I put the food on the conveyor belt in the groupings, like the dairy together, and because they're more likely to pack it together and then just gets put away.
Faster. And it's easy. It's right. It's easier to put it away when you get home if all the stuff that goes in the refrigerator is in the same bag.
Right. Right.
And there it goes. Yeah. No, I do that too.
I would say one last thing is that we really limited TV. Mm. We let them watch the what I call public television. You know, they liked Reading Rainbow and those kinds of things. But we didn't let them watch regular TV that much. Once a week, they could choose a show. And then on the weekends, we watched family things together or we rented movies. So especially my boys, just they're still saying lines from Mel Brooks movies and all this kind of silly stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Those are really great suggestions. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Where did I write? Oh, I was wondering about your Sunday dinner. So did you, when you say dinner, is that to you the evening meal or the midday meal?
That's the evening meal.
The evening meal. Yeah. Okay.
And we had a dining room and we'd sit around that table where normally we would eat in the kitchen.
Gotcha.
Around the kitchen table.
Okay. That's a great, yeah, I love that. I love that tradition of Sunday dinner. Either, I think it's probably a little easier to do it at night because then you've got time. Because if you try to do it in the middle of the day, you have to get, like, be prepared so that it's ready when you get back from church. And that's a little bit convoluted.
Right. I've learned that's kind of, isn't that kind of a Texas thing?
It's a Southern thing.
It's
a very Southern thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, my son-in-law is from Texas. And so my daughter has learned a lot of traditions of the South. And I know she taught me that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, let's see. Let's move on and talk about special challenges. So were there any special challenges that you faced in your homemaking journey and how did you work through that and what did God teach you?
Well, my middle child is hyperactive and he's still hyperactive as an adult. And that really affected the family and affected my parenting because I knew I had to step up and create a household where he could have success. Mm-hmm. And actually, the things I learned, like I did this behavior management training and that kind of thing, the things I learned benefited everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when you have a child like that, they can get a lot more attention than the other kids.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And sometimes that can be resented. But so I think that because I learned some really good parenting techniques from professionals, it helped everybody. Mm-hmm. I can remember at the beginning, though, I can remember, you know, like going to these classes and then coming home and then something would happen. I'd be like, okay, what am I supposed to do? You know, it didn't come naturally. But as time went on, boom, I'm right there. You know, I've got the thing. Well, you know, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? And we did a thing where when they did something wrong, we would say, well, we have a punishment in mind, but I'd like to hear your ideas. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, those kids came up with punishments that were far worse. So then I could come in and say, well, you know, that's a good punishment, but I think we'll do this. And they'd be like, oh, good.
Yeah. That was nice. Isn't that funny? How old was your son when he was diagnosed?
Oh, probably like 2, because he was really hyper.
Okay.
We went to a doctor and I can remember he was up on the counter pulling the blinds and I was like, sit down, you know, and the doctor's like, no, okay. So, and you know, what's ironic is that he grew up to be a project planner.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He's like the most organized person you'd ever meet. It's,
oh my gosh.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Blessing.
That's right. That's right.
Some of the things that I did were like laundry baskets. I got them each kind of a smallish square laundry basket and had their name on. So I told you I did, you know, light and dark every day. So then I'd fold it up and I'd put them in that basket and I'd put them at the bottom of the stairs. They were responsible for taking it upstairs and putting the things away. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the other two were more classic where they had things that were folded and things that were hung. For him, he hung up almost everything. I mean, including undershirts and things like that. And the few things that he had to put in a drawer, those drawers had tape on them. They were labeled, and so he could, you know, put them in the right place.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know a lot about ADHD. Does providing all that extra structure for him, is that what is helpful for him?
Yes. It could be a thing where the idea of putting that basket of laundry away is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He had no idea how he's supposed to accomplish that. And then, you know, maybe he'd just throw it all in the closet, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So, and then I also made a thing, and this was just for him. I'm not a nagger. I don't like nagging people. Mm-hmm. So I came up with this thing where I do a little symbol and I go like this, which is, you know, putting up my hand like the stop sign and then mm-hmm. pointing to my temple, which was stop and think.
Mm-hmm.
And I did send your pre-questions to my adult kids. And that's one thing he mentioned. He said, you know, that stop and think, that really helped. And then I wasn't saying, Charlie, you know?
Yeah. No, that's really good.
Yeah.
That sort of nonverbal cue maybe mm-hmm. feels a little less grating or threatening right. or whatever. That's
especially
awesome.
As he aged.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. Because no kid wants to be called out,
right?
You know, in front of his peers or whatever
right,
by his
right.
mom.
But I am very, very thankful for the support of my parents through that time, and a few of our friends were just so good about that situation, and you know, it really helped.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. What did they do? What's the best support that you received from either your parents or your friends? I'm just thinking for people listening who have friends with ADHD kids.
Well, I mean, it's easy to become impatient with kids like that, you know, mm-hmm. and I have a few friends who would just acted like he was the most wonderful thing, would take the time, would sit and talk to him. I had one friend who took our kids, we had to travel, and she took those kids for, you know, like 5 nights or a week or something.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, wow is right.
That's a good friend.
Yeah. My dad would take them fishing and do one-on-one things with all of the kids. Mm-hmm. And that was just so helpful. So, yeah, I think the support of family and friends is huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about relationships and hospitality. So we've talked a lot about the kids
mm-hmm.
and how you were able to help, you know, help your son and help them, mm-hmm. help them be helpers in the home. So what are some other ways that you invited your kids in to participate with homemaking with you?
Well, I had expectations about their bedrooms, keeping their bedrooms clean, making beds, keeping the rooms clean. I had them help make lunches, their school lunch.
Mm-hmm.
They would help with simple breakfasts. And later, you know, they learned to bake and cook. They, you know, they're all really good cooks. And that, you know, started little by little.
Sure.
They would set the table, they would clear the table, things like that, simple mm-hmm. things that they can do. And, you know, there were expectations and they lived up to them.
Mm. What's a practical way that you were able to show hospitality in your home, not just to people who don't live there, but, you know, how do you help one another feel welcome in the home? And then how do you extend that out to other people?
Well, my mom told me something when I was young, and it has just always stuck with me and rings in my ear. She said, treat your family like they're guests in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that means when I'm getting up, I say to my husband, do you need anything?
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple thing,
yeah.
But you know, that kind of thing.
I love that. Yes, I love that.
That shows love. It shows respect.
Yeah.
We regularly had grandparents over. We hosted, I can't even tell you how many, you know, barbecues in the backyard, birthday parties, holiday celebrations. In fact, when I turned 40, they sent out an invitation to a surprise party. It was a picture of me as a baby, and it said, a party for the party planner.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, wow. I didn't really think of myself that way, but then I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess I do throw a lot of parties. I taught my kids to send handwritten thank you notes,
mm-hmm.
and they still do that, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've met people at work that they're like, what? What are you talking about?
I know.
It's a lost art.
I'm doing my part to try and bring it back.
Oh, good. Good. You and I against the world.
Yeah, no, it's important. It really does make people feel seen and like, I mean, I think people don't expect it, but it's just nice. It's so nice to get the thank you. Yeah. And
after the party to say, hey, really appreciated your hospitality. You know, that spaghetti was amazing. You know, that makes you feel good.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think homemakers who are listening, just think about how you would feel to be on the receiving end of that and then make it your mission to do that for other people. I think a lot of people don't even consider like what you just said. We think, okay, we'll send a thank you note if we get a gift, but to thank someone with a note for their hospitality is just that little extra something special mm-hmm. that means a lot. So how do you think that homemaking helps to build community?
Well, I thought about ways that hopefully I contributed to that. For example, when we would get new neighbors in the neighborhood, I would bring over a lasagna and a salad and brownies. Oftentimes my kids would come and we'd go to the door and, you know, I didn't wind up being friends with all these people, like, you know, daily friends, but mm-hmm. I think it was just a nice way to say, hey, this is a friendly neighborhood and, you know, you can tell them garbage day and, you know, just the simple stuff. It doesn't take long. And I don't know, I think it really has an impact. I've had both ways where people made me feel welcome and where I didn't meet them for 6 months.
Yeah.
I used to do Meals on Wheels. And for those that don't know what that is, it's, you know, delivering meals to elderly in your neighborhood. And so they would come with me and a lot of the elderly people would, you know, always say, bring your kids in. You know, they didn't get to see kids maybe. And
yeah.
So that was nice. And the kids could see, you know, what an impact that had.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing I participated in was refugee resettlement for Lutheran Social Services, which basically it was through my church. And I did it two times, one for a family from Burma, which is Myanmar, and one for a family from Afghanistan. And you're basically setting up a household so that when they get here to our country, they can go in and here's this apartment and it's got the things that you need. And, you know, it was a lot of work, but we had a team and, you know, the church was willing to either, you know, donate things or money. And, it was a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Oh, I've never heard of that before. And I love that.
Yeah.
Refugee resettlement.
Yes, and Lutheran Social Services.
Okay. Is that something that's primarily done through the Lutheran Church, or do they partner with a government agency to get these people?
Well, it was through the government.
Okay.
And I learned a lot about, you know, all of the requirements. And then we would help these people find jobs.
Okay.
And it was very rewarding. And I remember one time I was invited to one of their homes for a meal. And in their culture, it was honoring me to eat alone. So they, you know, sat around the table, but I was the only one that ate. So, I mean, I learned a lot.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. I would love to expand what I do here to talk to learn things like that and talk to people in other cultures. So yeah. I'm praying for that. Maybe we'll get there one day because there are some universal things about, you know, a home, but those particular kinds of cultural differences are just fascinating to me. So,
oh, yes.
But I love that you brought this up about this refugee resettlement, and I'm going to look that up and maybe put some links. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they still do this.
Assuming they do.
Okay. Yes. I'll put that in there. And I love also that you mentioned Meals on Wheels and that you took your kids with you. And just in case people who aren't familiar with it, you don't have to make the meals. No. Go pick them up at the Meals on Wheels place. They've already made them. They're usually like freezer meals, right?
Not in this case. It was a fresh meal. And as it turned out, a person that lived on my block was the one that was in charge of what they called the meal site. Mm. And I hadn't met her before. And so that was kind of a nice surprise. But some people would come to the site to eat, but then the shut-ins, you know, we would take these meals and they would be, you know, in little containers and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
For me, it was just a matter of visiting and bringing the food.
Exactly.
That's really nice.
Yeah, and you can get your kids involved with that too. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about seasons of homemaking. So transitions are always happening in our lives, but in our homemaking lives as well, as kids mm-hmm. come and kids go and all of that. So what would you say was the most difficult transition for you? From one season to another in homemaking? And what are some things you did to work through that?
Well, when my kids left, that was a little bit of a change. You know, you're going from buying 8 pork chops to 2, but
right.
my youngest went away to college in August of 2008. And in September, I had a heart attack. I was 46 years old.
Wow.
It was not something I expected. And in fact, I was denying it for most of the day because I knew I could not be having a heart attack. However,
oh my gosh.
I became convinced and I was right. So anyway, that was a challenge. I had been working full-time and commuting to downtown because I only had one kid home and, you know, we had kids in college and needed the extra income.
Right.
And I was also doing recruiting for a Christian college in Lithuania. So they needed English teachers for both the regular semester and for a summer language program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd come home, I'd make dinner, and then I would do this, you know, on my computer, I'd do this recruiting. So I decided that I tried to go back to the job, but I felt weak. And I think I tried to go back too soon. Mm. And so I quit that job and I decided, well, I'll just do this recruiting. And as it turned out, they got a new person that I reported to, and we didn't see eye to eye. And so I thought, you know what, this is a good time to make a break. So I stopped doing that. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, I don't have any kids at home. And, you know, keeping house with no kids in the house is pretty easy.
It's a whole lot easier.
Very clean person. We're very compatible that way.
Oh, that's good.
We both like a clean house. Uh-huh. And, you know, I remember I was making like salmon for my lunch and I'm thinking, it's a little fancy. I had my spices alphabetized. And after like 6 months, I decided, you know, maybe a little no-brainer job would be good. Mm-hmm. And I said to my husband, I'm going to try to find a job that I could do with my eyes closed. So I had a lot of administrative skills and I thought, well, I'll look for a job. And someone at Jazzercise said, do you look in the local paper? And I thought, the local paper? Okay. And sure enough, I found a job with the company that we had rented with for a year. And so I got the job. It was 2.5 days a week. And that job turned into 3 days a week that I'm still doing now. But one of the transitions, I would say, for me is for a long time, my family was worried about me. Mm-hmm. They didn't really trust me as far as like telling them things about like a doctor's visit or that kind of stuff.
Oh.
At the beginning, like my husband, if he had to leave, he would call the lady who was a nurse across the street. street. Like I needed a babysitter. Yeah.
Was this before or after your heart attack?
After my heart attack. It was shocking to everyone.
Yeah.
And I think they thought, well, if it happened once, it could happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really different for me because I was always the one worrying about other people, not the other way around. So, but it was also a nice time. I was able to go to a Bible study with a high school friend. Like I said, I joined Jazzercise. But we made a family decision. I would never work full time again. Mm-hmm. And I have stuck to that. I will not do it. but I have a good balance now. And I guess that's the lesson I learned is that mm-hmm. balance, life balance. Mm-hmm. I see it in my kids where they're getting out of balance. And, you know, you have to have time. You have to have your downtime. Downtime is huge. Mm-hmm. You need time to take care of your home because if your home is organized, you can come home from that busy life and have your peaceful sanctuary.
Yeah. Have your
rest. If you come home to piles, you know, everywhere and your laundry's not done and all that, how can you rest?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, you can't. Oh my goodness. I can't believe 46. And you said you were denying it all day long? Like,
yeah. Like I was having these kind of pains.
You were having symptoms. Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, no. And then I like tested myself by walking up a hill and it didn't get worse. I thought, oh, I think I'm okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I didn't admit it to my husband for like hours.
what was the straw that broke the camel's back? Like,
well, he said, I think I should take you to the hospital. I said, oh, no. Just take me to one of the, what I call a doc in the box, you know, one of those little clinics. So we got there and it was closed because it was a Sunday afternoon.
Oh.
And what it was is I had pain going through my chest and I couldn't lift my arms.
Oh my God.
It was radiating down my face. Oh. And I thought, well, this sounds pretty much like what you read about. And so he brought me there and dropped me off to go park the car. Are you going to be okay? I said, yeah. I walk in, poof, flat on my face.
Oh man.
Yeah. So I guess I waited a little too long.
Wow. Oh gosh.
Anyway, I'm the healthiest person in the room now.
Okay.
Oh, I don't mean you.
No. I know what you mean. I gotcha. No, that's, what a story. What a wake-up call. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Oh, yeah, that's great. A great way to characterize it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love, you know, the lessons that you learn from that about balance and, you know, let's just say, don't wait until you have a heart attack to decide that you need the balance in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what right now you've got this balance and you're doing this little mm-hmm. part-time job and you're still keeping a home because you have a home, so you got to keep it.
Right.
So what does your homemaking look like in the season that you're in right now? How are you still challenging yourself to grow?
I had kind of another big transition when my husband retired.
Oh, he's, yeah.
So that happened in 2000. And he's a pretty domestic person. Mm-hmm. So he took over a lot of the duties, you know, cleaning. Mm-hmm. He does most of the cleaning. He does really all of the laundry. So I still do the meal planning, the grocery shopping. He doesn't care to do that. And I don't think I would care to eat his cooking. And I would say that to his face. I'm not gossiping.
That's fine.
I make the social plans. I do the hospitality stuff, mm-hmm. gift planning and purchasing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the house got very quiet. So I try to, like, you know, I learned from other people. I bought all these pretty placemats and got these really nice wooden trays, and we set that up each night and I make the dinner and we eat like either in, you know, in the colder months, we eat by the fireplace or we eat out on our patio. We Aww. Put music on. I have a nice speaker mm-hmm. and little LED candles and, you know, just set a nice place because, you know, it can be a big change when you've got the loud family and then you don't.
Yeah.
So, meals have evolved. Family meals, you know, large, big boys and all that. And also, you know, aging, you want to cook differently. So I would say that, you know, cooking low carb, portion control, that's huge. So often the things that we like, you know, they're, it's like big for a family. So what I did is I bought these pans, which are basically half lasagna pans. So when I make some kind of casserole thing or a lasagna, I do it in both of those and put one in the freezer, which is great, you know, to have later. I try to, you know, cook with nutrition appropriate for our ages. And I would say that after 36 years, I'm really thankful my husband took over laundry. That was not my favorite thing. Well, we made a bedroom for our grandchildren. And so it's decorated for them and they call that their room. We, you know, we usually have a little something on the bed with a little gift or candy or something. But they're comfortable in our home, and our daughter has told us that they feel like it's, you know, it's a safe place. My grandson has some food allergies, serious food allergies, and he knows when he comes to Granny's house, we're not going to have to worry about those things.
He can eat what Granny makes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
And I think also making new traditions with our kids, sharing holiday hosting, that kind of thing.
Oh, those are great. I love that. There's still work to be done as a homemaker with an empty nest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I have some questions for you, sort of a rapid fire question about homemaking tasks. And you can give me a short answer or tell me a story, whatever you would like. So tell me about what do you feel like is your worst homemaking fail?
Oh, well, that is the easiest question on your list.
Okay.
It was the great pork chop debacle of 2009.
Oh, well, now I have to hear this story.
And all three of my kids listed this one when I sent them the questions.
Oh, okay.
So I made a Christmas dinner. It was like breaded pork chops, and you just kind of brown them, put them in a casserole with sauerkraut and potatoes and bake that. I had it all served on everyone's plates. The first person cuts in and the pork chop is still raw.
Oh.
And this was 2009. I mean, I was an experienced cook and everyone laughed and we put it all back in the dish, and, you know, but I was really embarrassed and just, I couldn't believe it happened at that point.
What did you figure out why? Was the oven not on or something or what?
I don't know. I just didn't bake it long enough.
Maybe they were still kind of frozen when you put them in or something.
Maybe.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, how about a memorable homemaking achievement?
That has to be my cookbook.
Yes,
1999, my daughter said, "Why do you have all these loose pages all over the place? Let's make a cookbook." And so she did the bulk of the typing. And we made a cookbook and we reprinted last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And added new things.
Oh, okay. So you guys put it together. She typed it up. And was it something like you had some copies printed for family or?
Yes. I printed for family, offered them up. And then in 2022, my middle son redid it and said, "Let's add new things, maybe take some things out that, you know, are whatever we don't need anymore." And there were some corrections to be made. And then he said, "You have 1 year to do the edits." So I had to go through, and because there were mistakes, you know, of course, with us typing it. And then we reprinted, and gosh, I think I did 50, and I Christmas, just this past Christmas, and I think I have maybe three in my closet.
Oh, that's so cool. So where did you, like, where did you get imprinted? Like at your local print shop or what?
Yeah. Part of my, at work, I work with a printer and I asked him about it. And so, and, you know, they have a binder on them and, you know, a spiral. And of course we don't have pictures, but what a big thing that Charlie did is he asked the family to go through and make comments on their favorites. And so that was good. They gave blue ribbons to certain meals that are just, you know, family meals, the best ones. And then they put in funny things, you know, just funny little lines. And I mean, it's precious. It's really precious.
Okay. So I'm imagining, so like on the page that would have the recipe, it would also have the comments about that recipe.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
It would say like, oh, my mom made this, you know, every week and we loved it. Or like the Great Pork Chop Debacle, that recipe's in there and it tells about that.
This is a fabulous idea, Kathy. Yeah. I'm going to definitely file that one away and I'm sure someone will be inspired by that. That's so cool. Okay. How about your favorite homemaking hack or tip?
I think that has to be the meal planning. Plan for the whole week. I have a pad that has each day. Okay. And so, you know, I actually write it in the day. I make simple meals on work days. I don't try to light the world on fire on work days. And keep a freezer list. Okay. Otherwise, you're not going to use the stuff in your freezer if you don't remember what's in there.
Amen. So how do you keep your freezer list? Do you just have it in your, where do you keep your freezer list? On your phone or what?
No, I have it handwritten. And then I'll say like if I buy, you know, let's say chicken breasts and then I bag them up into the appropriate, you know, amount for our family. And then I have them labeled because I always think I'll remember, but I don't.
No, you don't.
And then, you know, I'll say 3 bags. Okay. And then I'll say 2 bags and, you know, so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That helps.
It really does. I have a whiteboard next to my deep freezer. And I do the same thing on the whiteboard.
Great idea.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm not great about, like, if I take something out for dinner and then, like, I forget to mark it off the whiteboard. But it is really helpful. So, okay. How about a homemaking tool or product that you cannot live without?
I'm a big believer in good cookware and good knives.
Oh, yeah.
My dad's career was selling cookware, the kind that you buy in the home. Mm-hmm. And so I was raised with the very best. And, I mean, I've used that same cookware for 40 years.
Okay. So what's your cookware? What do you use?
It's Lifetime Cookware. The West Bend company used to make it. I don't think they're even in business anymore, but, and then I use, what's that brand of knives? Cutco.
Cutco. Okay.
Yeah. And I just think if you have the good tools, you know, and you only buy them once.
Yeah.
Sure, they're more expensive at the beginning, but you're not buying them over and over.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to get better results. So.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's like art. So that's yet one more reason why I call this the art of home, because there's so many parallels in creating art and what we do in our homes. But when I was getting some art training, you know, that's one of the first things they tell you is, yes, it's more expensive, but your art will be affected by the quality of your art materials. Mm-hmm. If you use terrible paint with very little pigment, you're not going to be pleased with what comes out. And if the paper's not good quality, it's going to fight against you. And I feel like that's the same thing with cookware and knives. And if you don't have good, I mean, you can do some things with just some simple, basic, inexpensive cookware, but the better your cookware, the better results you're going to get, the less it's going to fight against you when you're trying to create meals and stuff. So
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. How about your signature dish?
Well, it has to be lasagna, Auntie Joan's recipe. It's not fancy, but it's my signature. Chocolate chip cookies. Always made chocolate chip cookies on the first day of school. It would be waiting there on the counter. And a funny short story is my daughter-in-law went to the French pastry school in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
And she called me one day and says, Kathy, can you give me your chocolate chip cookie recipe? And I said, well, it's on the back of the Nestle morsels. She said, well, why do they taste so good? I said, I have no idea. Maybe because I use butter? I really can't say, but I follow the recipe.
Okay. Do you put nuts? Do you put nuts in yours?
No.
Okay. I'm not a fan of nuts in my chocolate chip cookies.
No, me either.
Some people are.
Yes.
Your lasagna or Auntie Jane's, is that what you said? Auntie Joan's lasagna. Auntie Joan's lasagna. Does it have sausage in it or meat?
No, it's ground beef.
Ground beef. Okay.
Mozzarella and cheddar. There's no
cheddar, really?
Yep. Yeah. There's no ricotta. There's no cottage cheese or anything like that.
Oh,
super good.
Okay. Would you can you share it, or is it a secret
absolutely.
Family recipe?
No,
okay.
It's not a secret.
Great. Well, I'm excited to see that. I've never had lasagna with cheddar in it. That sounds really interesting. Okay. Let's talk about the art of home. So how do you see homemaking as an art, and where do you find beauty in the art of homemaking?
I think homemaking demonstrates love for family. I think I feel that I honor my husband and my children with my homemaking. I'm showing them that they're important. You know, when I was home and they would all be out of the house for the day, I felt like I could make a nice place for them to come home, to be happy to come home to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was not perfect by any means, but, you know, I felt I was doing a good thing. And I do remember one time when my kids were in high school and a boy came for dinner and we sat around the table and he says, "Do you do this every night?"
Oh,
and I thought, wow, that's a good reminder.
Yeah.
My boys were like, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's that is a good reminder.
I think homemaking creates a unique family experience, and I liken it to team building in business. Mm-hmm. I really feel like it's team building. And we have like all these inside jokes, and you know, it's hard for when somebody comes into our family. I think it's a little hard. There's a learning curve because we have all these silly things we say, lines for movies and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it's just from, you know, shared experience.
Yeah. Well, it's part of your family culture, you know?
Yeah. And one last thing, I think my daughter said something about Pinterest, and I gave that some thought, and what I feel is beauty in the art of homemaking is not a Pinterest post. Mm. It's the beauty and value is in life balance, organization, stability, traditions, really in those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's good. What's something that you're grateful for about homemaking?
I'm really thankful that my husband's job allowed for me to stay home, to be a full-time homemaker, full-time mom. Mm-hmm. I was always home when my kids came home from school, which I think is huge.
Yeah.
And I realize that there are situations where people can't do that, but mm-hmm. I'm thankful I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also thankful for a good example in the home that I grew up with. My parents loved each other, treated each other respectfully. And that's also a big thing. You know, you have an example to learn from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I always like to end our time with a word to the other women who are listening. And since you are a seasoned homemaker, we're going to speak to the younger ladies.
Mm-hmm.
What's a word of advice or just wisdom or warning or all of the above that you would like to give to those ladies coming behind you?
Well, one thing I would like to say is that two times in my life, I had women who were strangers to me come up to me. And, you know, here I am 62 years old and I still remember it. One time, one of my boys, I won't tell you which one, but you can guess, dropped pickles in the store from the cart. He reached over. And a lady came up to me and put her hand on my arm and said, "It's okay, honey. We've all been there." And I'm telling you, she was like an angel to me.
Yeah.
And another time it was in church, and I don't know, we were passing the peace or something, and one of my kids was very standoffish to me, let's just say. Mm-hmm. And she too, she said, "It's okay. This is going to change."
Mm.
So I think that's a lesson for all of us. Mm-hmm. When you're out for dinner and you see these little kids at the next table and you can't believe how good they're being, you know, I'll go by and I'll say, "Good job, mom."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's important to hear. I would say to remember to save time and energy for your husband.
Mm.
A few hours away on Saturday night always refreshed me. When they were little, I had a standing babysitter, and you know, all you'd have to do is go out for dinner. In fact, sometimes I remember my husband saying, well, we have to give her a chance to earn some money. It wasn't a long time.
Yeah.
But you came back refreshed.
Yeah.
Meal times together at home is just a priority. It's huge. And I think the last thing I thought of was, if you have to be away from home without your children, do something for them. And what I did, and this made an impact on them, even in their 30s, they talk about it. I would make a poster and I would have each day that we were going to be gone, you know, say that you're, you know, going to Hawaii or something. And then I'd have things on each day, like today we're going swimming, today we're doing this. And then I'd have a chocolate kiss for them each day.
Oh,
you know, like if we go on a trip now, 9 times out of 10, one of them will say, are you making me a poster? No. But it's just an idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea to help them feel still connected to you even when you're not there.
And I'm sure there are lots of women who travel for work and
you
know, not by their choice. They've got to be away from home. And something like that would maybe help.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. Those are some great insights, great wisdom. Thank you for sharing that. And thanks for being on the show and sharing your story.
Completely my pleasure. I'm it was so fun thinking back on all of those days and just really wonderful.
I'm so glad. And I'm glad you got your kids involved too. And they were able to give some feedback. And I know that was neat to hear what they remembered, because we always think they're going to remember like all the times we messed up, and they really don't remember that much. Right, you know, they remember
and the lines.
Yeah.
They remember. They'll say to me, hours do extra credit. Cause I'd always, they'd say, oh no, I don't have to do that. That's extra credit. And I'd say, hours do extra credit.
Hours do extra credit. That's so good. All right, Kathy, it's been a joy to get to visit with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this homemaker portrait of Kathy Bauer. I hope you have been encouraged and inspired with at least one nugget of truth or practical idea that you can implement in your homemaking right away. Kathy had so many great ideas and insights to share. It is hard for me to pick my favorite. However, the one thing she said that keeps ringing in my ears is the advice her mother gave: to treat your family like they are guests in your home. Kathy said, that means when I get up, I ask my husband, do you need anything? That shows love. It shows respect. And I would add, it cultivates a sense of belonging in your home among your nearest neighbors. That is your husband, your children, those with whom you live every single day. Familiarity can breed a lack of courtesy, and we must guard against that. As J.R. Miller said, there is no place where rudeness or incivility is so unpardonable as inside our own doors and toward our best beloved. The best way to fight against becoming lax and showing love to our best beloved is by paying attention not just to their physical needs, but seeking to learn what their hearts and souls need as well. That is best accomplished through prayer and communication. Ask God to make you sensitive to the needs of those around you, and communicate with others through your words and your attitude that you are available and willing to serve. Romans 12, 9 through 13 gives us a great template for this kind of hospitable love. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection, and take delight in honoring each other. Other translations say, outdo one another in showing honor. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. We will be visiting the topic of hospitality a good bit this year on The Art of Home. We are set to dive deep into the last two pillars of homemaking, rhythms and routines, and community, both of which involve hospitality. I am also working on a hospitality deep dive series covering topics such as everyday hospitality, hosting dinners, parties, overnight guests, and more. I'm so excited to bring that to you later on this year.
This episode marks the end of season 18, and after a couple of weeks off, I will be back with season 19, including 5 more homemaker portraits and our deep dive into the third pillar of homemaking, rhythms and routines. I will be joined by my friend Leslie Licato, and we are going to talk about the benefits of practicing regular rhythms of rest, worship, work, and play, and how our homemaking routines can help or hinder those rhythms. If you'd like something to listen to while The Art of Home is on a break the next 2 weeks, you may want to refresh your memory on the first 2 pillars of homemaking, identity and values and priorities. I will link those 2 episodes in the description box. Be sure to give those a listen so you will have a framework for our discussion on Pillar 3 next season. Also, be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, Homemaker Happy Mail. It goes out first thing Friday morning and is full of more homemaking encouragement for your practice of the art of home. If you have found value in today's episode, you can say thanks by sharing it with a homemaker you know who would be encouraged by this content. You can also leave a rating and a review of the show on your favorite listening app. And of course, you can support financially through Buy Me a Coffee. For more info on all the ways that you can support the show, go to theartofhomepodcast.com/support. Well, that is all for this week. I will see you in a couple of weeks with season 19. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.